Genesis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have within you the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way, with new eyes. So, stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, the United Nations. And I'd like to give some credit to Alice Bailey, the founder of the Lucis Trust organization. She wrote 24 volumes of literature, and the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show comes from the works of Alice Bailey. And later on in the show, we'll be talking more about a gift that we would like to give you, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it, but we'll explore that topic a little bit later. In the meanwhile, the following thought also comes from the works of Alice Bailey. When the United Nations has emerged into actual power, the welfare of the world will be assured. What is that welfare but love in action? What is international cooperation but love on a world scale? Is it unrealistic, even sentimental, to think of love on a world scale?
I don't think so. I think it's imperative. We have the ability now, our planet, to destroy itself through nuclear weapons. We have every reason to strive for more love among the peoples of the world. And the United Nations is one avenue by which that love can be achieved. People might think of love more as a feeling between individuals. But if we think of a more spiritual definition of love as wisdom leading to right human relationships, then we can see that that exists or can exist between groups and between nations. I think we have seen it on a global scale in the aftermath of September 11th in the response to the terrible attack on the school in Russia a month or two ago. We saw it in the aftermath of World War I when the first attempt to establish a kind of United Nations began with the initiative of Woodrow Wilson to form the League of Nations. And it wasn't successful. So there was World War II, the second phase of a global conflict. And out of that came the United Nations, out of people like Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill and many others who were involved in the founding of the UN in 1945. In the aftermath of the terrible suffering that led, I think, to 50 million people dying in World War II, they realized quite clearly that something had to be done. And that attempt to restore more love in human expression led to the founding of the United Nations.
Yeah, the UN was founded as a way of combating or dealing with conflict between nations. And if you really think about it, the kind of conflict or war that used to exist between nations is really diminished considerably in the world since the UN was founded. And I think the UN is in good part responsible for that. I mean, the conflicts and the wars that we have now are primarily within borders, and they are not so much between nations. So the fact that the UN exists as a place where relationships can be worked out and these negotiations can be worked out at a negotiating table, I think, is a tremendous step ahead for humanity to have had the vision to see the need for this and to bring this great organization into being.
One of the familiar accusations against both the United Nations and sometimes made against the writings of Alice Bailey is that it favored, or both of them favor, world government. That's not true. I think we have only to look at the response of the United States to the Security Council's reaction to our initiative to enter Iraq, which did not agree with it. There was no consensus in the Security Council to do so, so the U.S. simply ignored the U.N. and went in anyway. How can we then say that it's a form of world government when we don't even abide by it? It's not a world government, and the writings of Alice Bailey do not favor a form of world government. Clearly, at the present stage and for many generations to come, humanity is too diverse, and the pressures of historical experience, of cultural differences, of traditions, make it necessary for different peoples to work out their own systems of government that fit their needs and their experience and their expectations. That's inevitable, and it's probably right and good. So what the UN is not a form of world government, but a means for what is called global governance. And there is a difference in meaning. A world government would be a system that tells every nation, every citizen of every nation, what to do, and which would override and supersede the forms of government in those particular nations. But global governance is a recognition that there has to be some kind of worldwide consensus on how to maintain the rule of law and international stability. Global governance would be a consensus on how to achieve world stability, world norms of behavior and law.
Right, and it's the General Assembly of the United Nations, which is the collection of all the member states, which now number about 191, I believe.
I think that's right.
And in the General Assembly, it's been called a Parliament of Nations. In other words, the representatives from all the nations of the world come together at this point, at this great center in New York City, and hold a kind of parliamentary session that deals not just with security issues in the world, but for all the other needs, the tremendous needs that are necessary, that are working out in many other nations of the world, all the cultural needs, the food needs, the medical needs, and the poverty needs and refugee needs. These are what the UN is the most, not the most good, but the best at dealing with. And it does it very well because in addition to the General Assembly and the Security Council, which are the ones that most people hear about, there are also many other service agencies that work through the UN, like the Economic and Social Council, the UNDP, United Nations Development Program, and UNICEF, and World Food Program, and the United Nations agencies for refugees, and et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, there are many beneficial acts by the UN that really help the entire world.
I think you make an important point in reminding us all that the UN is not just the political arm, which we see in the General Assembly, which is now in session from September to December each year, when the various governments of the world send their representatives, and through the Security Council. That's also a political branch. But you're pointing out there are lots of other avenues of service that are global in effect on the environment, on terrorism, the removal of landmines, drug trafficking, money laundering. A few years ago, there was the spread of SARS, the flu that began, I think, in China. The UN's agency, the World Health Organization, was responsible for and successful in stopping the spread of that dreadful epidemic. And again, there's a new type of flu, avian flu, which is starting up. And again, the World Health Organization is the only really global institution in place that can deal with a problem like that. And we are all the safer for it. So this global approach is, not only is it a nice idea, it's vital. Today's world is so interlinked. We see it in communications, in travel, in many good ways and bad ways. It is inevitably the case that we are all interlinked with people on the other side of the world. And without the good agencies of the United Nations, there would be much less order and sharing of resources possible.
And it's been criticized, especially in the United States, about that it's irrelevant. We don't need the UN. And in many ways, the United people in the United States don't need the UN because they don't partake of the services like the health needs. And we're rich enough to provide those needs for ourselves, for our own citizens. So we don't always call upon the UN for aid, for help. And but there are many ways that we do use the UN, as you say, in because the UN has the
framework. Wouldn't you say the structure's in place?
Yes, but the World Trade Organization, it affects all the trade agreements that are made in the world between nations. The Law of the Seas program that was passed several years ago, and which, and unfortunately, I don't think the United States has ever signed on to, but it does regulate the flow of sea traffic in the on the oceans of the world, and the postal system is also affected by. If you send a letter overseas, that brings the UN system into play, in the regulations set up and enforced by United Nations. And the communication system is also affected by these universal agreements. So we do need the UN, very much so, and it does affect our lives in many, many ways.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, the United Nations. Earlier in the show, I promised you a free offer from the Lucis Trust, and the free offer comes in the form of a commentary just published by World Goodwill, which is an activity of the Lucis Trust. And the commentary is on the United Nations Humanities Challenge. Once again, ask for the United Nations Humanities Challenge. And it's available at no charge by calling the following phone number, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. That's the easy way to remember it. Think of 1-866 New York, Lucis. Lucis is L-U-C-I-S, or 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247. And we certainly appreciate the financial support you've given us in the past. That's what helps us to remain on the air, and we're very grateful for that. And I hope you continue to support us, because that is what keeps us on the air. And all donations, if you choose to do so, we welcome large and small donations. Donations can be sent to Lucis Trust, L-U-C-I-S, Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Those donations, by the way, are tax deductible, and maybe that would give you an incentive. But once again, if you have those donations and you would like to help us out and give us financial support, keep us on the air, Lucis Trust, send a check or a money order to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. 1-800-273-8005. And we also have an archived library of shows, which you can key into on the website. There are hundreds of them by this time on a variety of themes from the 24 volumes of Alice Bailey Works. The website is www.lucistrust.org. That's www.lucistrust.org. And please take advantage of that free offer, which is you can find out about and you can ask for by calling 1-866-NY-LUCIS or 1-866-695-8247. You know, we always mention that we have meetings, and people are welcome to attend those meetings. There's one coming up, isn't there, Sarah?
Dale? Yes, our annual World Goodwill Symposium, which we hold each year, is going to be held on Saturday, November 13th this year here in Manhattan. And the theme this year is going to be the United Nations, with a focus on UN reform and recognition of the spiritual principles that are innate and have been the foundation of the United Nations literally from the beginning. We're going to focus on understanding the principles laid out in the Charter of the United Nations, which interestingly begins, "We the peoples," not "we the governments," but "we the peoples." Again, there's too political a context given to the United Nations' role. It's not a form of world government. It's a means by which the needs of the world's peoples are met on diverse levels, from human rights and the environment to the ending of disease and poverty. All the full range of human and planetary needs are addressed by the United Nations. I don't want our listeners to think that we at the Lucis Trust and World Goodwill maintain this rosy view of the UN as a perfect institution. Of course, we realize it isn't. How could it be? It was made and it's run by people. And we're not perfect yet, none of us. So how could a human-created institution like the UN be perfect? There's a lot of creative thought that's being put into reform of the UN. I'm no expert on it.
Yes, there's been, ever since the UN was founded back in 1945, it has been undergoing change, or at least there have been efforts by practically every Secretary General down since the beginning to push forward some kind of change, whether it be substantial change in the actual structure of the UN or just change in the way the Secretariat is working. So in Kofi Annan has been the latest one who has put forth a tremendous amount of work on this regard, as changing and transformation of the UN system and making it more efficient. And he was actually challenging the UN delegates, the members, to come up with real substantial change. In the 2000 World Summit that he sponsored by bringing all the heads of state together, in the year 2000, and he outlined a tremendous amount of changes that he was advocating. And
you mean the Millennium Goals?
The Millennium Summit, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so those changes are still being worked out. And so there is a lot of change and reform going on.
A lot of thought is given to the Security Council, isn't it, about restructuring that?
Yeah, and that was restructured once. Yes, they increased the number of delegates in the Security Council, but that's always been the one of the big bones of contention with a lot of people, because it gets so much publicity every time there's a world conflict and having to do with security matters in the world. Why? The Security Council appears on your TV, and so everybody knows what's going on there. So yes, there's quite a drive right now to change the structure of the Security Council and to add more more nations. So I don't know how that's going to work out, because there's quite a lot of opposition, particularly with what they call the P5 nations, which are the United States, Great Britain, China, France, and Russia. Those nations have a permanent status, and they are also have the veto power, and that's why it's such a contentious thing, and that's what wants to be changed.
I wonder if one of the problems that the UN faces today is that it has to work through nations. And here we enter into a quite a spiritual theme. We take it for granted that there have always been nations on Earth, but actually, as I understand it, the nation, the idea of the nation, is quite new in human history. That's probably seen in the fact that the United States Constitution is one of the oldest on Earth, if not the oldest, and yet the United States is quite a new nation. Before there were nations, there were groups and tribes and fiefdoms. So I think only in recent centuries have real nations coalesced. But now I think we've grown beyond the workability of a nation. We have been driven by developing technology and the increasingly smaller world into the need for a new level of interrelationship that supersedes nations. You could say that when nations were developed, they overcame tribal consciousness, but now I think there are global entities that have to supersede nationalistic biases. And we see this in the way business is conducted, the way the environment can take us all down with it.
Well, yes, I mean, the world is so interdependent now. There is no the sovereignty issue of each, which is nations hold so dear, is one of those great barriers that is gradually giving away, because we have to work with other nations in the world, and so some of our God-given sovereignty rights have to be ceded and reduced. And so it's in this interdependent world, it's inevitable. It's necessary, in fact.
Don't you think that this issue of sovereignty is related to the question in the individual spiritual growth of the integration of personality and soul? Mm-hmm. We've talked about this on past programs, that the individuality and the independence and autonomy of the personality increase and become finely hued and expressive in forms of talent and intelligence. But then there's a point where that developing, integrating personality realizes that something still higher wants to consume it, or it wants to be subsumed by something higher, greater, and more expansive, which is the soul. And we can see this in humanity as a whole, in the need to grow beyond the nationalistic sovereignty that says, I am a German, or I'm a Frenchman, or I'm an American, and I don't care what's going on outside my nation. I'm going to maintain my national priorities and boundaries, no matter what the rest of the planet thinks. We've grown beyond that, and if we haven't, we're going to be forced to give it up.
And that points to the very spiritual nature of the UN and organizations, world organizations like that, because they only come into existence because human consciousness has expanded so. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it spiritual, because it is growing beyond the boundaries of the personality life, and it's beginning to merge with the greater whole, the greater soul.
There's something breaking through old parameters, and I think the UN is at the forefront of that little chicken plucking its way out of its shell. It's under tremendous pressure, both from above in the sense of globalization. that's putting tremendous pressures on the UN to respond to all the problems and needs as a result of globalization. And from below, the pressure of civil society, of individual citizens throughout the world becoming more and more of a powerful force through public opinion. Governments don't have all the power anymore. We can look at, say, what happened in China in 1989 in Tiananmen Square and say civil society is very powerful, and in the Palestinian problem and in many areas.
And it's we the peoples mm-hmm. of the world, and that's what the United Nations represents, is the we the peoples. And so that's very much in the forefront of many of the leaders at the United Nations these days, because they realize they have to answer to the people and the needs of the people of the world. And that's what the UN does in its outreach programs of like UNICEF and UNDP and the World Health Organization.
Almost everybody I'm aware of who becomes more deeply aware of what the United Nations is doing really learns about their programs and their agencies and their effect worldwide, comes away with a realization of something to the effect that, wow, I didn't know the UN did so much and was so successful. Really, honestly, that's the reaction most people have mm-hmm. when they take the time to really learn what the UN is doing. Yes, it has problems, and yes, it could be better, and yes, it must change. And that applies to all of us that inhabit human bodies. We all must change and grow. This is a really peculiar time in the world's evolution, and the UN is going through growing pains just like all of us
right.
are.
Right. I think we have to keep remembering this is the place where relationships are worked out, and relationship is the key to understanding God's plan in the world. And if there ever was a center in the world that is necessary, it is the United Nations right now, because this is the only place in the world where international relations are being worked out.
Please take advantage of the special offer from the Lucas Trust. I should say free offer from Lucas Trust. It's a commentary just published by World Goodwill, an activity of the Lucas Trust. It's called, quote, "The United Nations, Humanity's Challenge." Just ask for that commentary. It'll be shipped out to you free of charge. And to get that, you just have to call us on our toll-free number, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866-NEW-YORK-LUCIS, LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S, or 1-866-695-8247. That's 1-866-695-8247. It's for free. Take advantage of it. I think you'll enjoy the reading. It'll be nice experience for you. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.